Good morning. I'm receiving a bunch of awards. We'll start off. just to ventilate some of the issues that we've raised with, or to get some wider perspectives and reason we chose to focus on a particular recommendation and an issue which we're raising here. Also, because this is an issue that's been before this committee before, and which the committee has acknowledged, it relates to national norms and standards for school funding and the minimum thresholds that are contained in those norms and standards. When it comes to learner equivalent allocation, this committee has acknowledged just last year that budget cuts have resulted in the targets and these thresholds being moving targets, which is quite problematic. So despite nationally set guidelines, provinces of course are empowered and have discretion to determine their own levels of spending. And just in the 2017-18 financial year, what we see in that year alone is provinces like Eastern Cape, like KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga being allocated or allocated funds below the national threshold. So cost is 5.5 and this is a pattern that we've seen quite consistently. And in that regard, we would urge the committee to request that we provide details, specific time-bound plans to address the failure of provincial education departments to meet the minimum learner thresholds, to determine why this is the case, and to discuss in the detail a plan as to how to address that. Moving on to the issue of early childhood and timeline for the execution of those roles. What is planned in the time frame to address questions around ECD funding, the question of who will administer and who will manage the ECD conditional grant, among other things when we're talking about ECD funding. What is ECD's ongoing plan to improve our system beyond the same system or audit, but as a self-sustaining system of data collection and processing for the ECD sector? What considerations are going into any policy and their sort of implications of the migration? Are any amendments required to the ECD policy to the Children's Act beyond what we're already seeing? And are there plans to cost once amended in order that we ensure those policies are properly implemented? The ECD policy has been in existence since 2015 and obviously hasn't been properly crafted up to now. So what are the plans and steps in place there? And finally, what plans are in place for adequate and substantial engagement around the migration, including all the stakeholders I just mentioned at all levels of government, but also at level of civil society and private sector owners? What plans are in place to ensure that they are heard at the appropriate time and that they input some insight and experience can be fed into these plans? I'll hand over to Priscilla to present on the responsibility and exclusionary admission plan.
Thank you for this opportunity. I guess we'll just speak about the task force, and we know that this is an issue that is close to a lot of you's hearts, especially those of you who represent constituencies that are in rural provinces. But the issue of learner transport is actually quite crucial, whether it's in a rural setting or it's an urban setting. It affects children's ability to access school and whether they can access school safely. So some of the difficulties that we have acknowledged and that we've seen in our work is mostly through the campaigns that our sister organization, Equal Education, has been doing in KZN around school transport. And one of the difficulties that they've identified there is that when data or information that relates to how children can access or how many children are in need of school transport, that has a ripple effect on budgeting and planning on making sure that the children who do need scholar transport are able to access it. And what we've realized in our work is that in KZN, for example, there are about 170,000 children who are in need of scholar transport, according to the stats of the department. But currently, only around 58,000 children are currently accessing that. So it means that you have a large number of children who are walking to school, and meaning that sometimes they do not attend school when it's raining or when they flood and things like that. And it's important for the departments to be able to get accurate data so that they can plan and they can adequately resource the schools with the buses that they need. So this issue is something that I think is not just for KZN alone, but it's something that applies to all the other provinces as well. And we would just recommend and try to encourage the members to try and push for monitoring of the provincial plans when it comes to scholar transport. So in addition to making sure that the adequate numbers are identified, there's also a need to prioritize children or learners who've got disabilities or barriers that might not enable them to easily access transport, and that's an area that also needs close attention. So we continue to urge the members of this House to continuously monitor and to hold the department to account to make sure that they prioritize learners with disabilities. So it would be good if one of the results that we've also seen is that KZN or the Eastern Cape will have different criteria for how learners can qualify for learner transport. In some areas, in KZN, for example, there was a distinction between whether the distance that's required is 3 kilometers or 5 kilometers, meaning that there are some kids sometimes who would miss out while others are repeating. So those kinds of things would be issues that this house can talk monitor to ensure that there is consistency and that there are no things that are being let out from a national perspective in all the provinces. So that's the main recommendation that we have when it comes to scholar transport. The next issue that we would like to just bring your attention to is the concept of exclusionary admission practices. As you're aware, there's a national policy that means to identify and assess and provide support for learners who've got disabilities so that they can be identified early on within the education system so that they're able to be either directed to a school that provides full service or they might need to go to a special needs school. The difficulty that is there is that there are some serious challenges when it comes to the implementation of this policy. And a lot of learners that need support, whether they are in a full service school or they're in a special needs school, is quite low. And that's something that we believe that the child can possibly make sure that they pay attention to that to ensure that all children are included within the system and they're adequately supported according to the needs that they have. One of the next other issues has to do with the issue of undocumented learners. And whenever we talk about this issue, there are always quite a lot of murmuring around it to try and understand who are we referring to when we say undocumented learners. A lot of people, the first thought that they have in their minds that only relates to foreign children, but in reality, undocumented learners relate to any child who does not have documentation. It could be a South African child whose parents are not documented themselves, making it difficult for them to get documented as well. And that means that their requirements for coming into the school system, they don't meet those requirements, and either they're excluded from being admitted into schools, or once they are admitted in, there isn't a short period of time for them to be able to comply with the requirements. And some of these requirements are quite difficult and stringent. We know that in a lot of communities, their children who live with their grandparents and difficult for them to prove the identity of their parents are deceased or, as I've already explained, when their parents themselves are not documented for one reason or another. And the backdrop of this is that the Constitution states that everyone has got a right to receive an education, and it's an unfortunate issue when documentation becomes the barrier to them accessing education, which is a fundamental right. So some of the recommendations that we have requested the House to pay attention to is the implementation of the policies that assist schools in identifying children with special needs to provide them with the support that they need, and also just following up with the DBE on their plans on how they will accommodate learners without documentation. We know that there's a circular that's been circulated by the National Department at the moment,
will let my colleagues present the report. I just will start by giving a brief background on why we deem this to be such an urgent and important issue. I also just want to say that Section 27 is a public interest legal organization. Our work focuses primarily on access to health care services and access to basic education. We focus on improving the resourcing of schools in the poorer schools, the historically disadvantaged schools, and we focus on assisting vulnerable learners to access their rights. So that's just a bit of background on our basic education work. Let me start by saying that, as honourable members are no doubt aware, in terms of the school infrastructure regulations that were promulgated in 2013, plain pit toilets are no longer allowed. Section 27 interprets this provision to mean, both in terms of the right to basic education and in the regulations, that the continued existence of these plain pit toilets is unlawful. Our government must therefore have an immediate and effective plan for the eradication and replacement of these toilets. As you will hear when my colleagues speak, while the Limpopo report questions the accuracy of the different data sets that government uses, our report notes a DBE data set that reflects that there are some 3,898 schools nationally with pit toilets. 507 of these are in the Limpopo province. Then there are further 3,040 schools with other types of sanitation, but where pit toilets have not been demolished. 400 of these are in the Limpopo province. This means that there remain over 6,800 illegal pit toilets that currently present an ongoing danger to learners. Over and above the obligation to eradicate pit toilets, the school infrastructure regulations also require that learners and teachers must have access to toilets that are private, safe and secure, and hygienic. Within this regulatory context, I want to read out some of the names of the learners that we at Section 27 are aware of who have died or been injured because the school toilets do not meet the above criteria. That is, they are fit toilets or they do not meet the other criteria that I mentioned. All of you here today would have heard of the young boy, Michael Komape, a 5-year-old who fell into a pit toilet at a school and drowned in human feces. This happened in 2014. Section 27, as you know, has represented his family, and we are awaiting the Supreme Court's appeal judgment in this case. You would also know of the young girl, Luka Maketwa, another 5-year-old, who also fell into a pit toilet at a school in the Eastern Cape, and also died very tragically. She attended one of those schools where, though there were other toilets, the pit toilets had not yet been demolished on the school grounds. Then there are also some of the lesser known cases, like that of Siamthanda Mthunu, a 6-year-old who died in 2006 when the walls of his school toilet in the Eastern Cape collapsed on him. Similarly, Lister Makongwa, a 7-year-old who in 2013 also died when the walls of her school toilet in the Limpopo province, collapsed on him. There is the case of another 5-year-old learner, Orapilwe Dilwani, who in 2016 also fell into a pit toilet in the northwest and was injured. His case is currently with a law firm and no doubt will be before the DBE at some stage. Finally, there's also the case of Mukaseli Sawai, who's a 4.5-year-old boy, who fell into a pit toilet in February this year in the Eastern Cape and had to be rescued. It was in the pouring rain and it was quite a difficult situation. He seems to have sustained some long-term lung damage from having swallowed human feces. This is probably also another case that will be before the court at some stage. So I mentioned these to you as some of the more serious incidents that we are aware of. We are aware of them because of our involvement in the Komape case, and then people calling us up. with other stories. No doubt there are more. I'm also not focusing on those kinds of stories where there's the daily and perpetual infringement of dignity and privacy, like the young girls and boys who have to go to school, go to the toilets in school fields, or where there are no doors, and so forth. Honourable members of the committee may be aware that in April 2018, the Limpopo High Court delivered the judgment in the Komape case. One of the orders of the court was that the Limpopo Department of Education develop and report on a plan for the replacement of all flat toilets in the province with safe and hygienic toilets. Now, there are many problems with the report presented. I just want to highlight one. The most problematic part of this plan, in the context of the deaths and injuries I have just mentioned, is that according to the plan, the Limpopo Department will only complete replacing these flat toilets in the province by the year 2031. So in the context of all the injuries and deaths I've mentioned, it means that learners in these circumstances, where there are over 6,800 illegal foot toilets, it means that learners will remain at risk till 2031. So before I hand over to my colleagues and discuss the report, I would like to implore honourable members of this committee to apply the necessary and urgent pressure to the other tiers of government to ensure that there are immediate and, most importantly, effective sanitation plans in place to ensure that no more learners are harmed in Limpopo schools, but indeed in all schools in South Africa. I am now going to hand over to my colleague, Mateo, and he's going to take you through a very amazing and effective infographic that we at Action 27 have developed. It's based on the research that we have done and that is in the report. And basically, it makes the point, based on our research, that all the data used cannot be accurate. And as long as you don't have accurate data, you can't fix the problem. And if you can't fix the problem, you perpetuate the dangers that exist. So on that note, I'm handing you over to Mateo. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Alasmo, for the opportunity. So this takes you through some key findings that I highlighted in the report, which is the report is quite detailed, and I'm sure you have it in front of you. But this just highlights some key findings that the report came up with. So between May and July 2018, Section 2017 went to Limpopo and visited multiple schools to assess and remain the sanitation facilities. So what this infographic shows is the areas that were visited, right? And you can see from the dot represents the schools that were visited by Section 27. And you can see these dots are quite widespread across the province of Limpopo. And so we visited 86 schools. And we have data from 86 schools that we visited. And from our findings, nearly half of the 86 schools had unblockable pest toilets. This is just the 86 schools that we saw and we visited. So 41 of the 86 schools that we visited had unblockable pest toilets in their premises. And this just shows you the red of the schools with pest toilets. Now, what further worries us from our report is that only 22 of those schools are under the Limpopo Education Department's August plan that Brian was talking about. Only 22 country. Now, the last number that we had from the department was sitting at 2,524 and in 2018, but after this audit, the number jumped up to 2,995. This number was from the rapid sanitation audit report, which is also from the department. But now, a few months later, the number was down to now 1,306. So the numbers that the department is relying on fluctuate so much that you don't know where the actual amount of fiscal is, what the actual amount of fiscal is. And this is worrying because how is it that you're going to fix the problem in with fiscal is in the problem if you don't know what the actual amount of fiscal is? So it becomes It doesn't cause it to be able to plan properly to eradicate this if you don't know what the number is that you're looking to work and eradicate. So that is just some of the highlights that we found on this report, and I find it that will be most important.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before I launch, I'd just like to say that the exact infographic that Maria just talked you through is designed as a companion to the sanitation report that's in front of you, and is linked in our presentation. And I encourage you, if you have a moment, to go and scroll through it yourself, just because some of the colours don't come out that well in the screens above you. But it really is very useful to scroll through. It is interactive, so it's worthwhile thing to take up in this stream if you have the time. So my job, I've just got 2 slides, which I won't detain you for too long, but essentially my job here is to just take you through some of our findings and our recommendations from the report. So I've just selected a few key things from the report. 2 key findings. So the first is often related to schools that we have had access to and visited and spoke to about the conditions of that region. 33 had good toilets and unacceptable sanitation. 10 had new sanitation, but the old ones still existed. And the situation there is just as unsafe as the children are using the toilets, because there's still a risk that they fall in and get injured or die. 35 had inadequate toilets, so not enough. The number of toilets, the learners to toilet ratio meant that there were far too many learners using one toilet, and so there are obvious implications for that, which is the learners end up standing in queues to get to toilets because there is simply not enough for them. 3 of the schools had toilets that are not fit for purpose, so they're not age appropriate. Often they're too large for grade R learners, or they're not disability friendly. And another 11 were poorly maintained. So this is just our sample. As I said, these are smart schools that we have access to at Section 27. These kinds of things you see just in that small sample. What we also did, in addition to analyzing our sample in the report, is we did desktop research on various bits of data that's available. And one of the pieces of data that's available is is some of the characteristics that, that everything like that might have. So it would be live, it would be able to be updated as things change, because as these things get rolled out, it affects the course of data changes. There would be mechanisms to report inaccuracies. If for whatever reason data on the database was incorrect, there might be a mechanism to correct that. Freely publicly available, so that you and us and civil society and any of the communities you can see this information, and it's going to be verified for the audience. The next thing that we recommended is increased responsiveness in district and circuit officials. What we found in our research, and this comes out just as far back as 2012 when Section 27 started working on these issues, there was a problem with district and circuit officials responding to schools. So schools would complain, and they would just get no response. And they would only respond upon a series of litigation, which is not ideal, and it contributes to the problems of data accuracy. There are reports which are being lost in the system. The third thing we recommended is protection for whistleblowers, and this again comes up repeatedly as far back as 2012 since we've been working on this issue. There is intimidation of principals and school staff from district and circuit officials. They're scared to report these things because they're being threatened. And you may have highlighted and bold there, and essentially what we need is an effective plan for school sanitation in the Limpopo, but also nationally. The issues are not only in the Limpopo, but our data was talked to about this, so that recommendation is going that way. An effective plan for school sanitation, again, this is some of the characteristics that a good plan would have. It would be concrete, it must be measurable, it must be time-bound, it must be budgetable, it must be money available to implement the plan. It must include interim solutions for the most urgent cases. And it must include the ability to monitor and evaluate the plan and report back, reporting mechanisms. The final slide that I'd like to talk to here is what's about what is the money, how we're going to afford all of this, because it's all at a time to hard budget-wise at the moment. One of the things we did in this report is that we did an analysis of how much money is available in the book to put in place and implement a plan like this for school sanitation. And what we found is that there are various places that money could be found to spend on this were it to be made political priority. So in the 2017-18 financial year, which is the year that this report analyzes, there was 194.5 million rand and which is up from 13 million the year before. There was also 957 million in regular spending, which is substantially up from the previous year as well. So there's huge amounts of money that could be used, which could be recovered and targeted towards improving sanitation conditions. Other places where money could be found, and I'm skipping to my last bullet point there. You will all be very aware that there's essentially two places where funding for school infrastructure
commend the committee as well, because I can tell you, the morning after Michael Kumalty was on, I was there at that school, and we pushed that issue through the provincial department, and there was a media statement going out and undertaking by the provincial department that in that financial year there would be over 800 bit twitters eradicated. We all know it didn't happen, of course, sadly. And that was before you got involved in representing the family. It was right there the next morning. And we went to inspect all of that, but we try and inspect all the cases also that is brought to us as members of parliament in that constituency. My concern, chairperson, is that, and I think it's for all of us, is the mere fact that the monitoring of the budget allocations to the provinces are problematic. And we've asked the minister, you know, how can we monitor the spending? And it comes with equitable share or whatever grant compared to could we make all the money going to provinces conditional grants? And that would go through trading. Certain things must be, because we know that money are being used most probably not for the purpose of what we're intended to, especially in our poorest provinces. The concern also is not only the pitwise. Pitwise is life-threatening, not even at the schoolyard. We see that in our villages, that children, when that's eradicated and the new system is implemented by municipality, they don't close or take away the old system, and we have found children seen in photos specific. Again, very recently, last year, a little child that fell into an unused such weather. So what the matter is, if the schools where you report on that don't have or do have proper sanitation, not maintained. Not maintained. There's no system of, I won't say a prefect system, but somebody takes care of the bathrooms and what happens in those bathrooms as well. So no maintenance, no money spent on maintenance, and there are no proper facilities like even a bin for you, sanitary towels or soap or toilet paper, or whatever the case may be. And very, very often the other problem with sanitation is that there ain't any water at many of the schools. And you need water to have proper sanitation as well at the school. I would also just like to comment on maybe I'm very curious to see that you worked on the on EWLC 4, claimed that the real spending per learner declined by 8%. I would like to know if you can explain to us how that was determined, because I, you know, reading the report today, but explain to us how was it determined, because the department says it's not true. And then just very briefly on ECD, I mean, we're all anxiously awaiting March 2020 to see, and the Minister did undertake to brief us as progress is made. But when all of this was announced, like rate double R, I think a quick study was made by some civil societies out there that we can't even have enough teachers and classrooms at the moment. So, I mean, grade double R comes, for example, we needed at least another 10,000 classrooms and another 10,000 teachers and everything else that goes with it. So I think all of us are just as concerned. We absolutely agree that there needs to be a more that ECD should come to the education department based on social development for various reasons. But obviously it's got to come with the resources and be run correctly from the beginning. Otherwise, we're going to have backlash of problems forever. So we're also really concerned about what's happening there. But, Chair, I don't want to go into a lot, because there's a lot of this that I think we all feel for. It is not nice to visit the school and try and fix the bathroom, and a month later, after you've done it, it's back to where it was. Because this is just either no money or misappropriation of money, not to do any maintenance. I would like to know actually what all those community workers on that program
well, and I spoke to some of our shadow ABC states, that they cannot, even if they wanted to increase the kilometers, to have more than excess transport, they cannot, because they've got a 2.5 billion shortfall. So they cannot give access to more learners for them to have adequate transport. So that, I think, in itself, when I looked at some of your recommendations, that it is correct to say we need to really look at the revised model for funding and put a proper funding model in place. Look at proper norms and standards when it comes to the transport of learners. I totally agree with you on that one. Also, my concern now is then the inclusive education, which is supposed to be implemented soon. But if you look at what Section 27 just said and what I've heard, that we are not ready to implement it yet. Point number one, our schools, if you are going to take a child with a disability, is not properly equipped to have a child. That's why they're excluded on that, in that basis. Also, if you have to look at the toilet sanitation facilities, when we talk about sanitation, we actually forget that we have learners with disabilities. And we're not creating those spaces for them. I picked that up, especially on the LTD grant, that it doesn't really cater for that, for learners with disabilities. And that is actually a concern, because that is also exclusionary. For the child can access the school, but because of the facilities not being there, they are then automatically kept at home, or they are referred to special needs education, but the intellectual ability actually requires them to be in a normal school. So I'm glad that that concern was raised. According to the screening, according to the SIAS, it's very alarming when the department would come and tell us of basic education, how we picked it up, that one, each school has only got one MSA. And that, for a school, in most cases, you would find minimum, you would have 600 to 700 kids at the school. And for one, that is not even properly equipped. We're not putting much funding into that part of the education structure to say, how are we spending money on psychosocial services? Do we have enough psychiatrists? They don't have data on the ratio of psychiatrists school and so manner. So I think those are the things that we should also highlight more on, so that we know the clients and learners with special needs go through, and that they're not excluded, and we actually understand how to address their challenges. Section 27. We looked at the spending, but we are also need to consider that in some provinces, especially where I come from, the Eastern Cape, supplies are not being paid. This then creates another challenge when we have toilet facilities that are incomplete or it's just been abandoned. I've been to numerous schools in Buckleworth, I've been to the CPCT and Mobile, I've seen it, where the suppliers have come, take their supplies and leave. The poor kids are vulnerable to abuse because now they've used the bush. And I think those are the things that I'm glad she came with a proper report, but I hope this can be spread out to other provinces as well, especially the minister needs to consider your structuring of the budget, how you put it out. I looked at it now, and it makes more sense, because more things are going for sanitation projects than non-sanitation projects, and I really hope they will introduce, implement your plan. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jonathan. The report about the justice is of big concern to us. You know, Dr. Jonathan, there's really enough performance and much more performance. But I want to just have a start now with this poor data on the question. I wonder, therefore, if the number of whatever the motion of the question, what is the design of appropriate data for that? Because we need to deliver on what the disposition that we have. But now it's done, people tell or give something or tell what to do, but they should do something more stand to understand that. Because if you want to be a doctor, that school is supposed to make use of different criteria. In terms of progress, there is correlation between this progress to the school and the university in each other. This has the budget and has been allocated. Because if the schools, only the budget being allocated to schools, then this progress to the school and the university in each other. So, what can be the consideration there? We increase transparency too. Because if you have got kids, then what we have to spend on this approach for that term. So what we can charge, what we can spend to charge on that. It is quite the same we want to share with them. But we try it on that field, or in which one of the parents fell into, not yet demolished. I wonder if the community is at school now to just try it to take the initiative. Because they don't have to go to what we're now, if demolish that toilet. So it means there's still an animal that is waiting in that schools to keep our children there. So what can we do something now in the community? Because how can we get that toilet now? But it makes sense here, there is what to do. So if we look now, there's some of the contribution from the community, the toilet themselves, and the schools, teach us. Our section 37 is personal because you seem not to follow these things and you report to the first group solutions, you are going to post it all. But part of the only thing for us that we do in order to engage the advice communities and schools on this way, for us we want to go through this education, basic education, to do this. Because we see this, then we can personally engage our communities and schools, so how to deal with these issues? Because this big animal that is waiting for our schools to devour our children is of great concern to us. So that chairperson is going to make a comment that I'm watching. But perhaps if anything to be going to do, then I'm very much here. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, Madam Chairperson, sometimes for speaking after other people have spoken, can I just offer maybe just take an unorthodox approach to this? Because it's true that the letter as presented by both section 37
I'm saying to the Ghanaian leadership, in as much as we approach this matter, we should guard against what we call a black spot analysis. By the way, I'm a teacher by profession. What I mean when I talk about a black spot analysis, a teacher went into his class and he found his levels and he asked for this simple question, lifting this A4 type of appeal. What do you see? That was the question. And all of them responded, that we see the black spot. We see the black spot. The black spot analysis. The danger in analyzing anything in life, sometimes you can mess it up by being overrated with criticisms accompanied with uncalled for negative negativity. You see, if you get married to a woman as a man, every day when you look at her, you see everything bad. You will never have a sense of appreciating even the good that the woman may be doing. And let me tell you that from a black spot analysis, that marriage is doomed. In divorce.
She's very honourable member of the board, but there's nothing there. Can we just bring it to the point of the research that was presented? I've not been giving this sort of philosophical thing of any value. The church not in the real world.
Within the AG report, I'm talking about the 40% of
terms of safety in schools is not on digitalization that we should be taking as a threat in our schools. So I need to know why we did not cover all other areas of safety in our schools. And also, if maybe I would just want to check if your organization, is it a democratically elected organization? How often do you go for elections, and how is the composition of your organization? That would be very much interesting. Whether are you also affiliated politically or not, maybe those can help. Because in terms of the study, you incur costs. Who is funding your education? I mean, who is funding your studies? And two, why your studies were not done in other provinces where there is a proper problem in terms of the sanitation? Take, for example, KZN. KwaZulu-Natal is one province that I know that there is a relationship between the local government and the province for the local government to provide sanitation and the province, the Department of Education to pay for that, because there is no understanding that should be in care at the local government level. So why you did not take that study and tell us what is happening in those provinces and what is the difference between Limpopo and other provinces? Now you give us half-baked cake, which is only focusing in one province. You are not giving us the entire picture of our country so that we know exactly what is it that we need to do in terms of addressing the challenges that you are facing at the big education sector.
Thank you, Chairperson. The last honourable member has taken the question I was going to ask first. My question. If you're speaking through a teacher by profession, and I'm worried about what you are talking about, I just want maybe let me say that upfront. And I'm a unionist again. I've been a union leader for longer than 20 years now. But my honest question here is, it's from a different approach to the same question. Why is it that we are getting you reporting more on Limpopo than the other provinces? What I'm trying to find here is it honestly because problems are only in Limpopo, or maybe it could be that there are problems in Limpopo and you found a place that you could use to come and bash more the Department of Education. Remember I said I come from the ISP. I belong to the opposition. I don't speak for the ANC, the ruling party. I want an honest answer. And another thing very strange I'm going to do is to talk about the truth, the tender truth. You know, there is something called reality. Honorable members, pardon me, I just want to tell this truth. There is something called reality. You need money to do these things. You know, brothers and sisters, I believe you'll agree. agree with me. Yes, the government has the responsibility to use taxes, tax money, to provide for the citizens. But let me talk about the situation now as it is.
There's no money.
I'm just saying it bluntly. I got so disappointed when the president of my party, first day after the democratic elections, came to conference and addressed us and said, "Yes, I want to tell you, colleagues, I have had, he was the minister for the Home Affairs, Department of Home Affairs. I wanted to tell you the truth. We are alone here. I have had a benefit of seeing there." He has got his own way of speaking. "Of seeing behind there."
Please, no, ma'am.
That's what he said. Having said that, the Portfolio Committee has got a responsibility to take seriously all the issues you have been reporting on. We are not necessarily behaving as if we just want to shield ourselves and put you away. Honorable Chairperson, I do want to support a view of maybe the Portfolio Committee getting a benefit of having, of seeing the provinces, in particular the provinces that are so much in trouble. Just listen to them honestly stating their story. I do understand the issue again which we are dealing with here. The issue of the concurrent powers, which the national minister finds herself in. That the provinces are acting there the way they are acting. But there is a problem of concurrent powers. It takes time for the national minister to be able to arrest a situation that is happening in the province. My main point, Chairperson, is I am suggesting that we find a way of getting these brothers and sisters responsible for these provinces to come and let them tell their story. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable member, including equality in Section 7, that is given an opportunity to come and present. And I think we'll start by appreciating that this democracy that we're in, the current democracy that we're in, allows us opportunities where organizations can come in and present on the views of how we think what else can assist to resolve the problems and offices. And we should not allow a situation where they are faithless people who want to abuse the democratic process and platform to advance a narrative that has nothing to do with bringing solutions or unhappiness, but more
to make sure that they assist to resolve historical challenges. Because these issues that we're faced with of education, whether it's crime, whether there are processes that were caused by a deliberate process that is man-made as a form of apartheid oppression. Because it's one-sided process. And even the man, majority of the man of the country, is still in the hands of those that the head at that time. Now those that had the responsibility at that time were apartheid oppression. Who would cause the problems that were faced with? What role are they playing to make sure that they assist the government of the day to resolve the other issues that they caused in South Africa? Now we need partnership with the transportation service, deeper education, to force these people to a corner to comply. Then them consumers defunding institutions to discredit the government of the day and dealing with the problems that they caused. They need to partner with the government of the day to resolve the problems that they caused.
Oh, okay.
those recommendations were made that we took around. Yeah, right. That's what we're going to avoid as later today. But also I want to just say that our SDP alludes to the achievement of educational outcomes by 2030. And it includes the issue of safety, the issue of water and sanitation, and it also includes the issue of resources. And I think our ask is to monitor those things moving forward. My question to Equal Education, you have made a reference to the policy development. Can you allude to the specification of that policy and that you are developing? On the ECD migration, I think we are still waiting for the presentation in terms of protocol from the ECD. And I think they will come and give us that presentation. On section 27, I want the session to acknowledge the issues that you raised on the infrastructure, the issue of toilets and the RCD program. And the recommendation, of course, that you are making to the department. And I want to agree with Honorable Balaji. You know, the department for issues of activities allocated 2.8 billion for 2018-2019 financial year for issues of school infrastructure. And I want to agree with him that we would never sit here and agree with issues of corruption. If there is corruption, or if we think that monies that are supposed to deal with issues of infrastructure are used for something differently, I think we need to also make us aware so that we deal with those issues as a voluntary committee and deal with those issues. I don't think we will sit here and agree if there is corruption. We will sit here and agree that it must continue and nothing is going on. And issues of infrastructure, we've been saying, and without income, that they are very important as this voluntary committee. It's something that you cannot overlook. And the first statement that you are making, the references to the kids, what has happened, they are scary stories. And I'm interested in one thing that was raised here, that in Limpopo, you have said that there are school teachers who are even afraid to report these issues to the district because they are afraid of the yes, you know. Now that incident, I would welcome letters from those teachers, for example. So let's go over the portfolio committee. We go and we are able to look into the matters ourselves, and we are able to advise the department. We are able to make sure that the minister takes action, because if principals must raise such issues, I do not think they must feel ashamed, or they must feel that they can't raise such issues because they are afraid of what will happen to themselves. I also want us to even visit the issue of the transport as a portfolio committee, because I think we owe it to our kids, we owe it to our people that made us here to make sure that the money of the department are spent the manner in which the department tells us that they are spent. Let me give over to DP if you've got something to speak on. Before I give over again to both the Equal Education and
distinguished honorable members and members of the Education and Section 27. Chair, we welcome the reports from the two organizations, and we will look at providing extensive responses to those issues that have been raised in the two reports. However, Chair, if you allow me, we would urge the two organizations as the DBE, as Equalification has indicated in their introduction remarks, that they met with the DBE through the DG and some of us at the senior management to thresh out the issues that are contained in the report, and we were able to provide responses to issues and indicate issues where we disagree with the Qualification in that report. But we also welcome Section 27 if they do the same, so that we are able to address the issues that are in their report, because there are quite a number of issues that we think we would need to discuss and dispel some of the issues that are in their report. Just for an example, Chair would be aware that we will be coming to report to the Portfolio Committee, I think, in the next 2 or 3 weeks on infrastructure. And quite a number of the issues that are raised in the two reports are addressed quite extensively in the presentation that we will be making. But to say, Chair, you did indicate, for instance, in terms of sanitation, since the launch by the President, the state initiative, an amount of 2.8 billion has been allocated to the SAFE initiative only. And that is over and above what we are doing in IT and what promises are doing from the education infrastructure grant and the equitable share funding from the province. So there is quite a lot that is happening in that space that could find expression in the report that unfortunately we do not see them being reported upon, especially in the report by Section 27. The other issue, Chair, that we would just want to raise is we need to see infrastructure from a holistic perspective. While we also acknowledge and you remember that the Minister has indicated that sanitation is our priority until we have dealt with all the issues relating to sanitation. However, infrastructure is not only about sanitation. We are dealing with issues relating to overcrowding in schools, providing additional classrooms. We are looking at issues relating to maintenance of schools, issues relating to schools that are affected by disaster, that can go on and on. So it's a question of ensuring that whilst we are focusing on sanitation and basic services issues, we do not disregard other issues that might also spell danger to our learners if they are neglected. So it's a very delicate balancing act in terms of funding and programming of the infrastructure program to ensure that we address all the issues that are needed. I need to mention, for instance, that whilst we are not providing a lot of funding, but we still have to provide libraries and laboratories and things like that to our learners, even if for now there is a small amount of funding, but we need to chip at those kinds of challenges progressively to ensure that we reach our objectives. So Chair, that is what we are doing, and as I said, the number of issues that are raised here are receiving attention, and we will be able to provide extensive responses to the committee. I would check with your permission just to set Ms. Magalubis to deal with if there are any issues as to the area that she could form the report.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair, Honourable Members, Equal Education and Growth Centre, and Section 27. My colleague has mentioned, on the 18th of September, when Equal Education Law Centre met with the Department of Education, we were able to clarify the areas of that we agreed with in the report, as well as those that we didn't agree with. And I think the components of the planned sector with the Department of Social Development. Currently, we have been working hard at ensuring that what we have, we are able to take forward. So I think that in the report that was presented by the Equal Education Law Centre, they have highlighted what were some of the issues that we had raised with them, and have indicated that we will be able to bring to the committee by the end of December already the implementation plan with all of the relevant details. And so there's lots of work happening at the moment at national as well as at provincial level in preparing the system for the migration of responsibilities. We welcome, and I think Equal Education Law Centre is aware of the consultation that is happening with civil society currently. And so we will continue to do that as soon as we do have the plan ready for comments, we will be able again to go on another round of engagement with civil society, business, as well as with government departments. The chairperson, I think that we note the recommendations that were made in the Equal Education Law Centre's report, and just to indicate that all of the issues that they've made, the recommendations that they've made, we are working on those areas so we will be able to provide a detailed response to all of them. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Equal Education?
Oh, well, I'll start with you, that you are on the mic. Anyway, you've got a mic in front of you as well. Can you just say, yeah, respond?
Yes, I'll respond to some of the questions that are raised, and my colleagues can respond to others. So I'll address the question that was raised first about how the government is spending.
thank you very much for the questions. The one response that I have that was talking about one of the difficulties in the recommendations that we made was around the issue of where the function around transport falls under. And one of the recommendations that we made was to recognize the challenges that are there and the need for a close relationship between the Department of Transport and the Department of Education to try and navigate that difficulty in dealing with transport issues. One of the things that our sister organization, Equal Education, has been pushing was this whole idea of a conditional grant to deal with transport. And it's something that seems to have the support of the minister, and the problem is the idea of the conditional grant is something that could be quite beneficial to them dealing with the gaps that exist in the amount of money that they receive, and could go a long way to addressing issues to do with transport. So we call upon the honourable members of this committee to continue to just push both ministers to try and resolve
support and our contribution, maybe I must dismiss on the basis of supposed ulterior motives. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I will similarly to the EELC address some of the more general questions and then hand over to my colleagues that can deal with some of the technical substance around the sanitation report. I first just want to address some of the earlier comments around calling the provinces here to maybe speak to some of the findings in our report, but also some of the other issues that have been raised, the other issues that are raised in relation to other provinces. I think that that would be a very good idea. The Komati adjustment that was handed down in 2018 noted, for example, the lack of spending that had occurred around sanitation when sanitation could have been addressed and which led to the death of Michael Komati. I also mentioned to you the report that has been made around the plan for school sanitation, and I would therefore urge the national parliament to then speak to the provincial parliament, to the provincial government, and say why is this plan something that can only be realised in 2031. Surely this is a matter of more urgency. I also note other comments around norms and standards. Again, here, I think that that is very important. The previous special rapporteur on the right to education in the United Nations developed a report on improving the quality of education in countries all over the world. And one of the main recommendations that came out of that report was the importance of minimum standards, the importance of developing national norms. And we spoke about national norms here around transport. I think it's very important the issues of national norms and whether or not they guidelines or norms around non-educator provisioning in schools, in special schools. That's a very important issue. It's an issue that we are dealing with learners in hostels in schools in the Okane Kuria district in KwaZulu-Natal. We don't only focus on the football, and the issues there are also very serious, where learners are being very neglected because of the lack of care in these hospitals. So we would definitely support that. And then why sanitation, and also why the football, as I said, we're not just a sanitation, and we're not just the football. We are here because, to give you a bit of history, as you know, we were involved in the textbook case in 2012, where it was the non-delivery of textbooks. When we got involved in the textbook case, many of the schools and that we had been working with came to us about the really terrible issues of sanitation in the province and raised these issues with us. We have been working with our private schools in the Limpopo province since 2012. Michael Komape died in 2014 and his family, we then represented his family. But there's a long history here on sanitation. We would similarly have, like for example, I mentioned Mkhane Kure, the Mkhane Kure district in KwaZulu-Natal. We have been working there as well for many years. I'm not sure which members of this portfolio committee, you were members of the previous portfolio committee on the right to basic education, but we haven't just come here to present on sanitation. We have previously come here to present on our other research. So we don't go about this in a way where we just run to court. Where we see an issue, we investigate the issue, we research the issue. Like the sanitation report, we then put together a sanitation report. And one of the tools that we use is advocacy. We believe in advocacy. We believe in a constitutional and participative democracy. So we come here and we try to meaningfully engage with the portfolio committee members to speak to democratically elected. Our funding, as with Nurina, I also think it's unfortunate, given that we are constitutional participative democracy, that the issues have been raised in the combative way that it has. Our funders are also an open book. Our funders are on the internet, as with EELC. We take our mandate from the Constitution. I think many of us that are here representing civil society have come through very similar backgrounds where we believe in the Constitution and where we believe in human rights. So, Honourable Member Balachi, we therefore represent human rights. We don't represent anybody else in particular. And if I speak to my own personal history, I come from a family that was involved in 76. I come from a family that was involved in the student uprisings in the 80s. My father went to jail for that. I went to an apartheid school. I was the only girl in my school that made it to university. It was always a dream of mine to be a human rights lawyer and to fight for human rights given our apartheid history. And because of the importance of education, I have chosen to focus on education rights. I have to have a doctorate in education rights, and that is what I represent. In terms of whether or not we are elected, we are not elected, but we are public interest legal organization, as I said at the beginning. I could probably work at a big law firm. I don't want to work at a big law firm. We want to provide legal representation to people that can't access the big law firm, which is why we are here today. We provide legal representation to all those children that we saw each one of their families have contacted us, and we have not contacted them. We represent those families because they wouldn't be able to go to the big four law firms like Bowman and Riverwind and all of that. So, yeah. And then just on the matters of principles that have been victimized, we do have many. They do get very scared. They are intimidated by district officials. They do withdraw when they come to us with their cases, which is why we often represent school governing bodies and so forth. But we will try and bring those issues to you in the future. We agree that issues of infrastructure are not only sanitation, but they are very important, and that's where learners are dying, and which is why we are here. We're not just speak only about that. Tomorrow, if it's issues of bullying or issues of corporal punishment, and we have research and we have recommendations, we will definitely come before you on all of those issues. My colleague Samantha can speak to this more, but why we are here and why we did not write to the DBE, why we did not come to the DBE first. We have written to the DBE, we have asked for meetings to discuss the sanitation report. We have engaged quite a bit around other issues of textbooks. We have a very good relationship with the DBE, national and the provincial department, for example, on textbooks now and reporting textbook shortages. You will know we have been dealing with your colleagues around Braille and the publication of Braille material. We would very much like to be able to engage you more on issues of sanitation. And we note that you have invited us in this session today. So thank you very much.
Thank you. So I will just talk to the Honourable Matthias. He asked a couple of questions about budget analysis report. You asked about whether about issues with the infrastructure rollout because the suppliers are not being paid, with facilities get half-built and abandoned, and also questions about why we don't, where we should be advising communities and schools to demolish under-demolished timber chains to ensure their safety. The issue really, and what we're trying to get across in this report, is that the duty to ensure performance of the right to basic education lies squarely with departments, provincial and national departments. Whether departments are using implementing agents and contractors and builders and architects to build the schools, ultimately those people are being hired in order that the department can fulfill its constitutional duty to build those schools and fulfill those rights. And it is therefore the department's responsibility to ensure that those contractors are managed, that deadlines are met, that schools are built. Similarly, it is the department's responsibility ultimately to ensure that learners are safe in schools. How that is done, these questions of who should demolish, the department must make sure that schools are safe. There is a duty to once children leave their home in the hands of their caregivers and be placed in a school setting, that safety is the responsibility of the school in which they are placed and the department who is responsible for that school. The last issue that I will address is to follow on my colleague's question of why the FOGO. We have a prison term of FOGO, and in a lot of ways it's a pragmatic question. We work in a FOGO, it's where we have presence, where we have people on the ground, and because we have a presence, we can bring you information from that place, from the people who are on the ground there. It is in no way a suggestion that the FOGO is the only place where these issues are problematic. I've got information in front of me here, and I'll throw it on the note. This is information that comes from the state initiative. It comes from the president's office. And these numbers, what this information, and these numbers came out at the end of 2018. In terms of, and we've acknowledged today, and just to reiterate, presence of pit latrines is not the only problem with school sanitation. It's one of the very serious problems. So there are lots of problems. But using the presence of pit latrines in schools as the measure, there are three provinces which are doing particularly badly in this regard. The one is Eastern Cape, according to the statistics from the president's office, there are over 1,500 schools with pit latrines only and no other school sanitation. In KwaZulu-Natal, there are over 1,300 schools with pit latrines only and no other school sanitation. And in Limpopo, there are 507 schools with pit latrines only and no other school sanitation. So it's purely a pragmatic question that we focus on the report, but these issues are severe, and they're severe in other parts of Africa as well, and they need to be dealt with at a national level as well as at a provincial level.
Thank you.
they basically like take away the priority. I don't know what your priority is, but I can say that they take away priorities because we have a province being a lot of pressure to get rid of bad schools and assessors, which are in perfect condition, but now they have to prioritize those schools in the students in more schools. And also intervene at other various issues that are more eminent out in provinces. I just want to find out if you looked at that, because that is a big issue. It's arbitrary school, arbitrary camp school at the University of that was tackled. But because, you know, that you, the education and Section 27 put in any pressure, now they have to, the provinces now have to prioritize and say, building a school now we have to look at that school. I don't know the thing that people are asking, have you actually looked at your priorities to say, you know, considering ongoing costs because they keep children. And can you just look at that and or maybe the schools in the Eastern Cape where they're not affording or they're basically dangerous schools that actually harm children. Have you ever looked at that? And also just make a comment about education and discipline. I just want to say, you know, you've come here many times, interrogated different provinces, and I know that, you know, you're extremely independent, and it's just unfortunate that you are in this way a funded organization by a certain elite or whatever, but that is just an unfortunate point.
Sure, I'd just like to mention three things. First of all, while we were talking, I just reread some documents I had to say that on budgets, for example, the total of Infos budget was cut for the next financial year with 1.2 billion rand, 5-7% I think over the NTE period, which is a lot of money if you think that they have this huge backlog. I would like to say something, and I don't think we have to keep on reminding ourselves. We have to, but we shouldn't do it to patronize people who come to present to the committee. And that is that I think there can be no doubt and to be no sort of acknowledgement that the apartheid system particularly hurts education. We all know that. But it can also be not that there are any excuse for running away from the fact that since then, 25 years later, we still haven't dealt with the dignity, faith issues of our learners at school. And we must acknowledge it. And I would agree to my colleague that we must be grateful. I don't always agree with the reports that I've read from Equal Education or Section 27, and I wrote the textbook issue in 2012 in the Provost Commons. We ran it for 2014, I think, if I remember correctly. And the fact of the matter is, we should be grateful for all the reports we get because it gives us as politicians an opportunity to drive those issues to fix it so that the poor people out there can get better. That's what we must do. Not come and play games here. Doesn't matter who funds who. The fact of the matter, we need that information to become better at what we do in the education department. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I don't know what the link is. Let me also take this opportunity to welcome the report and really appreciate the two presenters or entities that has presented. Chair, I believe that members have raised so many important questions. And I just want to make a follow-up on two important questions seek to create systematic change in the education sector. Maybe if you can just explain that, is it the same thing that you responded to earlier? Or when you say you want to create a systematic change, to what exactly? Maybe if you can elaborate more so that I can understand. The second one is on the issue of Section 27. The gentleman when you were presenting, you wanted to show us videos and you saw some other photos that were there. My question is, you have right on the parents give you right to actually, use those children in your presentation. The other one, in your presentation, you give us a report from May till June 2018, I think. What is the progress report that you have collected today? On all the projects that were done by the department, and when you check their report, are they talking to your report? Is it the similar report that you have, or is there any difference in what you have seen from 2018 July till now, or this year, 2019 July? Is there any progress on what you have reported to us, especially on monitoring whether is there any improvement on what the department has actually presented to say on the IT projects, on the same school, this is what we have done. Is there any progress that you have recorded as yourself to check whether there is any improvement made? But that's it. I think as the ANC government, we're doing very well with all the challenges that we're facing. It's only been 25 years and we are dealing with a lot of backlog. What is the change on making sure that we deal with it? The proper challenges that we're facing. So we're not going to have project about the progress we're making and we'll not lose focus. And in our country, there are so many illegal entities to put that mind. That you find play by night schools, colleges, even churches. So I think it's within our rights to check whether what we are dealing with is it in the best interest of our children and also our country. So we are not apologetic about that. Thank you very much.
What did you say?
Mine is just basically a comment, but I want to echo what Master Comments previously said. I think Chair basically calls for us to have a workshop on all the responsibilities of this portfolio. Because what happened today is very unfortunate, is we have several organizations come to report on how they see things. It's not necessarily that it should be an agreement with it, but it was just their outlook on how things are. And it will explain engagement going further in the next 5 years. This is how we invite our guests and treat them in that manner.
itself. And the law does provide priorities of some form. So it gives a staggered approach where it says for the first 5 years after 2013, X needs to be done, and then the next 5 years, and then 10 years. So it tries to stagger things so that the department can try and reasonably prioritize. So the issues that Section 27 is talking about when it comes to the fiddler train, the law clearly states that right now, playing fiddler trains and schools that are made of inappropriate structures are unlawful. They should not exist. So those are things that fall within priorities that the government was meant to start with and to try and make sure that they have dealt with within that time frame. And then it's actually a really good law because it makes things look forward and by setting reasonable standards to say, for example, by a certain number of years, schools, the ideal schools, black schools, the schools that you are concerned about are reasonably taken care of so that schools have got access to laboratories, schools have got fields. So by the end of the time frame that the floor should have made sure things are reasonable, every school in South Africa should look like the former model of these schools. Thank you. So the priorities are quite clear and they're achievable, but so far we know that the deadlines that have passed already have passed and they have not been met.
Respond to one direct question about the limited information of parents after the reimbursement issues, learners footage not having content from the parents. Thank you.
All right. No, I think thank you very much for the presentation that you have come to present. Beware an eye opener. Don't underestimate that. Beware an eye opener. The stakeholders that work with the Department of Education are important that we are also known them. And probably I must just say if you have felt offended by the questions that have been raised by the members, I do apologize on their behalf. And I don't think they have meant to offend anybody, but rather a question is a question. And I don't think to us as members also unnecessarily we must bring politics into play. What brings us together here is a child. And whether a child is black, whether a child is white, but a child remains a child. And we want the best for all our children, irrespective of color. Thank you very much. And if we do not invite you, remind us to invite you. We want you to come. We want you to come and tell us what is happening. That probably we are short-sighted to see. Because other things that you are looking at, it's things that will take many years to get into. But if we tracked our road today, we would really appreciate that. So thank you very much. And whilst they are taking themselves out, can we get a 10-minute break? And then we come back to